And to finish us off, excellent. Thank you very much, Richard. Off you go.
And now for something completely different, a phonetician. What I'm going to talk about is some sounds that occur in conversation, and what I want to do is just show you some of the actions that these sounds are implicated in. And I want to, I'm a linguist by training and background, not quite by birth. And so what I want to do is argue a bit about the boundaries of linguistics. So I'm going to start here with the well-trodden ground of linguistic sign, which is one of the oldest ideas in linguistics, the idea of some bit of meaning that maps to some bit of language. So in English, that thing is a tree, in German it's a Baum, and in French it's an Arbre, and so on and so on. Choose your language. But the idea is that we have a form meaning mapping, and that's kind of the basic unit of linguistic description. And you're going to see in the next couple of minutes a lot of quotes by John Laver, who's one of my favorite phoneticians. John Laver's one of the few phoneticians, I think, who's thought a lot about different kinds and types of meaning. So this is how phonetics, as I was taught it, is delimited. So you have a box, and in it, some sounds that you can make in the vocal tract are part of language, those are the green ones, and some sounds that you can make with your vocal tract are not part of language, so swallowing, snoring, laughing, and lip smacking are canonically not part of our linguistic description. So if we just take what's in the green box for a moment, this is how the International Phonetic Alphabet divides up the sounds of language. So into two types, segments, which are consonants or vowels, and supersegmentals, which are not terribly well theorized, actually, in the IPA, but that's things that you might call prosody, so pitch, articulatory setting, rhythm, voice quality, duration, and so on and so on. And we can plonk all of these things down into a transcription and say, the lady next door, of course. You might recognize that. If you do, get a gold star. John Laver has a slightly bigger view of the world, which includes non-vocal things, and he distinguishes verbal from non-verbal and vocal from non-vocal. And the green stuff remains what phonetics is about. And the thing I want to talk about today is clicks. So sounds which are made by the vocal tract but are not verbal in English, that is, they're not parts of English words and canonically not described as part of your phonetic repertoire in English. And I want to unpack some of the uses and functions of these, and from there I want to argue a little bit about what we think is linguistic and what we think is phonetic. So most studies of non-lexical sounds, that is, things that are not, don't really belong to words, and including a lot of work on phonetics of conversation, really focuses on suprasegmentals, that is, prosodic things, long domain things. But I want to talk about clicks, which are exactly the opposite. They're punctual, momentary sounds, and they don't fit into standard descriptions of English. And where I want to take you is to say that some of these sounds, these non-lexical sounds, have features of this dual patterning, just like a sign, so a form and a meaning. So what are clicks? Well, you can make one yourself. So start by putting your tongue ready to make a cut sound. So bring the tongue back up to the roof of the mouth, hold it. Bring the front of the tongue up to make a t sound, close it, and what you should feel is a ring around the edge of your tongue where it touches the surface of the roof of your mouth. Now suck down on the tongue and release the tongue tip, not the tongue back. Everyone can do that, you do it all the time. Now see if you can hum and do it. If you can do that, that's a nasalized click. We're going to hear one of these. No, we have no movie.
Have you stuck in the jack?
Oh. Do I need a...
Have you got the jacket?
be problematic later. Here's a language that has clicks in a typical linguistic sense. So this is a language from South Africa. It's got four different types of clicks, which can be manipulated in five different ways. So it has a total inventory of 20 clicks. And this is the repertoire of consonants that we have in English. And English does not have clicks, so we don't need the click symbols of the kind that we just saw. And this is the conventional story. But if we listen to English conversation and pull the clicks out, okay. Some of them are loud, some of them are not so loud, some of them are very sloppy and sticky, some of them are repeated multiple times, some of them have got, like the one on the far right, has got increasing lip rounding, so it goes like that. And we have a lay understanding of clicks. I've mostly transcribed them as click or using exclamation marks in my transcripts. So here's from a radio phoning show. A woman's talking to the radio presenter about her bad behaviour on holiday. I think she'd gone dancing on a table or something. There was another British family there. I'll play it for you. So here the presenter does two clicks. And then he glosses what those clicks mean. Tutting, that's the, look that up in the dictionary, that's the word for clicking, and pretending to disown you. And tutting obviously has this sense of disapproval, and disapproval we'll see is one of the commonest lay glosses of what clicks do. So this is one of a nice little piece of data that shows us this is the ordinary orientation or understanding of clicks. But they actually do a lot of things, and I'll try and show you a small but representative sample of all of these. So clicks mark the boundary between two sequences of talk. They can display incipient speakership, I'm about to say something. They come in word searches. They're involved in displays of stance or feeling, just like the tutting example we saw. And they also work as a kind of metronome to help time turns of talk. I've got a nice example of that. So here's a new sequence indexing click. This work was done by Melissa Wright, one of my PhD students. It's the call opening. He picks up the phone, says the phone number, they do greetings. And then Gordon gives the reason for the call, and in between these two things, he produces a click with an in-breath. So the click and the in-breath is at the beginning of the new sequence. They're not all very loud, they're not all very noticeable, but they are there. And this is the way they often go. So you get a click, an in-breath, and then you get some talk. You get the beginning of the next sequence. And these clicks probably, I think, have an origin of getting ready to talk. When you're not talking and you're resting, you probably have your tongue pressed up against the roof of the mouth. And one of the things you need to do when you talk is you need to pull your articulators apart, and you also need to breathe in because you need air in order to speak. And this produces actually quite a complex system with lots of different types of clicks. So as well as the clicks that I told you about with the two closures, one with the back of the tongue, one with the front of the tongue, you get a family of other sounds called percussives, where which you might transcribe as a dot and a P and a T, or a dot MTL, all sorts of different ways of transcribing these, or lip smack noises. So the separation of articulators, which becomes noisy when inhalation goes on at the same time, like these sorts of things. And clicks are part of that family. They're called percussives in phonetic terms. And so these might be organic or vegetative sounds. And so the prediction would be, although I don't have enough data yet, that we should find other sounds like this in other languages in similar sorts of situations. Clicks also occur in word searches, and this is where I really hope the video works. So I'm going to have to get out and see if I can find the video elsewhere. Well, I'm sorry, I can't find it. We'll have to. I know why it is. It's because I'm stupid. I think I know what's happened. I need to start this up again, sorry. Is this what happens when you upgrade your software and it actually downgrades it? So what we've got here is, I went over to the library to, and then a 0.6 second silence, and then a click, see about that. So that's the word search bit. And this is quite a common structure on paper. You get a pause around a place of maximal syntactic control, and then you get little things like ums and ers and silences and clicks. And what's so marvelous about having video is that you can see what's happening during the silence. Luckily, I've got some stills. So during this 0.6 second silence, the speaker gets to the and then she draws her lips in. You can see, so these three stills are taken during the 0.6 second silence. You can see that she pulls her lips right in. And then you can see her swallowing, and you can see the tendons in her neck as she swallows, and that's absolutely the action that you need when you do the suction down on the tongue to release it. And then she does the release. And this is terribly exciting to a linguist like me, because here you've got a sound which is not really part of the inventory of English, which has an origin in a physical action, which for some reason is embedded in a social action of repairing your own of doing a word search, right? So if you think clicks are on the margins of language, I don't know why you think swallowing. That's very, very interesting. It's kind of a challenge to what we think of as linguistic. So here's a summary of what we get. We get quite a lot of things parallel to this. So you suspend the talk at the place where the syntax is nowhere near finished. It's usually at the start of a syntactic phrase. Suspend the intonation, display trouble, and during that trouble you might get silence, and the silence might be some physical thing like swallowing. Here's another one. Okay, now because most of the data I've worked on is audio and not video, I don't know how many of the silences in the transcript actually correspond to visible swallowing things, but you might be able to hear the swallowing when you get to the 2 in library 2. Okay, we've got some displays of stance or emotion, and in the linguistics literature, this is a summary of what people say clicks do. So they express, it's not that people haven't written about clicks, but when they have, it's been on the basis of intuition rather than on the basis of looking at lots of material. So they display disapproval, annoyance, irritation, exasperation, impatience, regret, sympathy, and encouragement. And I think encouragement is to horses, encouragement. I might be wrong, but that's the obvious kind of context. Well, they do far more than that. All of those are basically negatively valenced, except maybe the encouragement one. But the clicks do much more than that. Here are Jade and Kate talking about, one of them has dyed her hair. Kate has dyed her hair red, and she's wondering whether it's a mistake. And Jade makes a compliment and says it's in really good condition, and Kate responds with a nasalized click, so one of these kinds of clicks. You don't get very many nasalized clicks. They are less than about 6% of all the clicks I've collected. So you get a compliment, then you get a click, and you get a response token, and then you get words. So there's usually a three-partedness to it. You get a click, and then some sort of an ooh, or an ah, or an oh, or something like that, and then some words that display what you're displaying. And you recognize it as soon as you hear it, right? It's not mysterious. Here's another one. This is a story. It's a romantic story. You might like this. I don't. So he wouldn't stop asking her out. He used to ring her 3 times a day. She'd go, no, no. And then it's received with a click, which is aspirated, and then you get a glottal stop and a nice, ah, that's lovely. So it's the same structure, click, particle, words. Again, completely recognizable. Here's another one. This is from a painful phone call between mom and her daughter, Debbie. It's full of, why don't you have a real job? Why are you not married? You're obviously not going out to meet the right kind of man. And now mom turns to self-blame. The reason that her daughter is a failure is this. These are her words, not mine. She's really, it's a terrible conversation. What we get is two things. We get three things again, click and an in-breath, and we get an O, and then we get stop that. And so we're getting some resistance from Debbie to mom. But the timing of this is really interesting. Let me just play it. Now, the click and the in-breath come exactly where, at the point where we know where mum is going with her talk. Didn't do a good enough okay, now I know where you're going. There you get the click and the in-breath. And the words, oh, stop that, come after the main accent on raising you. So it's perfectly timed to be in overlap without being interruptive. So the click is not interruptive, it's not turn competitive. And also it's kind of a neutral click in the sense that all these clicks are typically click plus in-breath. And none of them are particularly affect-laden. What's doing the affect is their position and the stuff that comes after them. It's the oohs and the ahs and the words at the beginning of the turn, which really deliver the message about what the action of the turn is. So you get lots of these click in-breath turns just at the beginnings of answers to questions, where there's no reason to think that the answer to the question is doing anything like resistance or rebuking or disapproval or annoyance or anything like that. And there's an interesting chapter in the Handbook of Conversation Analysis by Stephen Levinson about planning. And so if you think about where the oh stop that comes and where the click and the in-breath come, the click and the in-breath is doing sort of pre-turn noises. It's saying I'm about to speak, but without yet really taking the turn. And it's in the part of where you might think the production planning is going. It's at the point where you can recognize really clearly what the action of mum's turn is. So it's a sort of display of understanding of the progress so far and at the same time marking that there will be a response, I think. So here's a common sort of construction that we get with clicks in this situation where there's a display of feeling or stance. So you get a click, a response token, and then words. And I think if you want to understand anything about how clicks display affect, you need to look not at the clicks actually, but at the stuff that comes afterwards. And a click by itself isn't usually enough to display the speaker's feelings. Something more is needed. So they all have kind of parallels. Oh, Rebecca, we've been through this before. This is exactly the same bit that Rebecca talked about from Virginia, except where Rebecca was interested in line 29 with the pain sound, I'm interested in Virginia's click at line 32. This is one of the rare instances. It was just, we didn't talk about this, it was just one of those bits of magic, and Rebecca showed this morning. So this is one of those rare incidences of a click without any other vocal material, but it does have quite a lot of visual material, and I bet you that, okay, it's a very quiet click, that's the other thing. You might not be able to see it because it's not a very good recording and it doesn't lend itself to a good analysis, but just to prove that it's there, I'm showing you a spectrogram, so if you don't hear it, I can tell you that it is there, it's just really quiet. I don't think we're going to see the video, but we might. No, and it doesn't either like to play. No, it's not going to play at all. Now I have to quit and I have to start again. So what we see here is, I don't need to go through the analysis of this because Rebecca did it for me and saved me the job, but in the bit where Mum says to Virginia, just wait and get some of the new fall stuff when it comes, Virginia and Mum are still looking at each other. And then what we get is Virginia does her click and she does this head toss. And at the end of the click, Mum and Virginia are visually disengaged. Virginia does the click and she goes like this, and Mum looks the other way. So it goes from a point of looking at one another to looking away from one another. So this click, even though it doesn't have a particle or words after it, it has certainly lots of physical expressions along with it, and it's in this context of quite a protracted sequence where Virginia's request has been refused not once but several times, and where Virginia has already displayed a dismay at Mother's behavior. So this click is kind of laid, it's a very, it carries a lot of stuff in the sequence and is, it has this embodiment with it as well, which I don't have access to on the other things. So to display a stance, we get clicks, response tokens and words, but we can also get clicks with visible behavior like head tosses and eye gaze. And the other thing I want to say is that when you display a stance with a click, it's not necessarily a negative one, despite our intuitions and despite tutting being kind of conventionalized in dictionaries as a negative bad thing to do, or displaying a bad thing. Here's the final phenomenon, it's clicks as metronomes, and these are, I think, just superb. So this comes, here I've put little stars over where the beats are. A says it's just kind of dull, and then there's some beats. It goes, God, what a miserable, miserable weekend. And in the meantime, B goes, ah, that's a shame, with beats like that. And they're very evenly spaced. What's lovely here is that the miserable, miserable has two beats, and then the click from B, which I think marks incipient speakership, it's got all the same structures as the other thing, so click, little particle, and then words. That click comes exactly where it, so to say, should be, as projected by the first two beats. And then the next beat, both speakers are speaking in overlap, on beat, together. Which is lovely because this is an affiliative aligning response from B to A. And to prove this, I've got a program from Fred Cummins in Dublin, who has written a program which looks for the rises in amplitude in the slope, so you can get some kind of placement for beats or perceptual centers. And if you, so the beat, here you have a waveform that's labeled that says, God, what a miserable, miserable weekend, and oh, that's a shame. And the beats are the letter B above, those are put in automatically by the program, and then the grid is put by me. So you can see the gaps between these beats are really very accurate. So this is precision timing, and the click is absolutely where it should be. It's just perfect. And you can also use beats clicks as metronomes to do other time types of timing. So here we've got Anthony and Ray, who are from Salford. Anthony is younger than Ray. Anthony's about 19. Ray is something like late 20s, early 30s, I think. They're talking about places they'd like to go. Anthony wants to go to Australia. And then you can see what he said. And then in line four, he does a series of four clicks. And as he does these four clicks, his lips get progressively rounder. You hear a difference in the timbre of the click. It goes like that. So the lip rounding and the change in timbre sort of projects the end of the lisp, because there's a limit to how much rounding you can do before your lips are closed. So it's sort of, somehow the fullness is projected by the progressive rounding of the lips. And then the laughter is pulsed laughter, so it's ha 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 type of laughter. I've just put that as stars. And the first laughter pulse coincides absolutely with the fourth click. So the laughter comes in on beat with the rhythm projected by the clicks. And then Ray, because this is being recorded as part of a sociolinguistic interview, Ray, I guess, turns the topic elsewhere. Yeah. So here's Fred Cummins's grid again. The red one is Anthony's, and then the left, it's really only the first pulse that's nicely on beat. The rest, then, you know, it does what it does. But the timing of those, the first pulse of the laughter is exactly overlapping with the beat of the last click. Why would this be? Well, obviously, coming in on time is a way to display alignment with another person. This kind of behavior promotes sociality. But one thing that makes clicks really good for this is because they're momentary, you can mark a moment in time, which is much harder to do with a vowel. For instance, it's much harder to say where the beginning or the middle of a vowel is. It's much easier to do that with a click. So because clicks are momentary, they're really well suited for marking this kind of temporal engagement. So in summary, clicks are part of the sound system of English conversation, but obviously not part of English words. They're involved in a number of constructions of conversation, so part of regular, orderly practices for interaction. And they co-occur with non-linguistic, so non-verbal and non-vocal practices like head tosses, swallowing, and laughing. Now I just want to come back to the heart of conversation, periphery of language, and I'm going to end, well, I'll show you. So this is kind of obvious. Conversation is a vehicle for social action and interaction. The way I see it is that speech is the primary vocal exponent of action and interaction. Since I'm a phonetician, I'm interested in this mapping between what we do and how we do it and how that's achieved using our voices. And clicks are involved in some really basic actions like marking incipient speakership, doing word searches, managing aspects of sequence, and so forth. But they're also at the periphery of language if you're a conventional linguist. Conversation shapes language in ways that conventional linguistics really has not bothered very much with. The kinds of meanings or actions that clicks deliver are not central to most linguistics because most linguistics is interested in sole speakers rather than in interaction. And it's mere performance, the stuff that we've been, that seem to be at the heart of the function of clicks. But it seems to me that clicks have got quite straightforward form meaning relations, and they're therefore conventional. By conventional, I don't mean sort of ordinary. I mean there are conventions for understanding them and producing them. And I only have little bits of anecdotal knowledge, but clicks in other languages don't work the same way they work in English, and they don't pattern with other sound objects of other languages that they do as they do in English. So there's some good reasons to think of clicks as linguistic. So in the top left-hand corner is our little sign with the tree and the baum and the tree and the alp. And I think we can just translate this fairly straightforwardly with the action stuff, the sequence stuff in the blue at the top, and then have a linguistic structure that tells us what we have to do in order to convey those things. So we don't have to abandon a very basic and useful structure. Though I think actually the complexity of those things is this massively understates how complex those structures really are. So this is just a broad brush. And these are my conclusions. I thought it would be nice to have something without very many words on. So I tried to visualize what I wanted to say. So you're my experimentees. This is the way conventional linguistics treats these things. So conventional linguistics, I think, talks about speakers. And the speakers are in separate boxes. And clicks are somehow in the space between the speakers and their interaction. That's what the red circle is, with the arrows going backwards and forwards. The click is in the middle of the heart because I think that's the functions of clicks are at the heart of conversation. And linguistics kind of excludes a lot of the things that we want to do with clicks. This is more the schema I would like, where individuals are not speakers, but actually interactants, and where their linguistic worlds overlap with one another and where linguistics has space for interaction and doesn't simply treat meaning as coming out of my head through my mouth into your ears and into your head in that monologic sort of way, but a more dynamic version along the lines of, say, Pickering and Garrett's model of interaction, of dynamic stuff. And clicks then take a place right in the middle of this because of the functions that they have and the uses that they're put to. And we thereby expand what we think of as linguistic. And for me as a phonetician, it means thinking a little bit beyond larynx to lips models of speech. If you want more, there's two papers. The clicks stuff is in a paper that's just out in the Journal of the IPA. Some other non-prosodic segmental things are discussed in the 2012 paper. So that's kind of bizarre consonants and vowels of English. That's it. Thank you.
Well, that was just great. Thank you very much. And thank you for battling with the technology.
Sorry about that.
We have a few minutes for some questions and observations. All right, Tom and Trevor, you can have the first two go.
Go ahead.
Richard, yeah. How many clicks are there in English? And are they in some way specialised for this kind of... actions, the functions that you discussed?
I didn't show you any of the statistics that I've got. I had a big study of clicks in York English, and in that data you get, if I remember right, it's either five clicks every 6 minutes or five clicks every 4 minutes, I think is what it is. So clicks occur very frequently.
Yeah, but I mean, are there different types of clicks?
Yes, but I don't know much about them. So we get tongue-tip clicks, like... We get lateral clicks, like... So Anthony's... Those are lateral ones. And occasionally you get bilabial ones, like... It's very hard to know whether there are differences in the meaning of the click. And the IPA... classifies them by place of articulation, and I think that might not be the best way to think of them. It might be better to think of them in terms of loudness, for example. And one reason I wanted to do this work was because I actually think there are different systems of clicks. So the incipient speakerships, you can do percussives there, but just try saying, "Oh, stop that," the way Debbie did, with a percussive like. It doesn't have the same effect if I go, "Oh, stop that." If I go, "Oh," that's different. So I don't think there's one system. And what we need to do is work out what the groups are and then figure out what the contents are. The nasal clicks that, those are very rare. Very, very, very small numbers of those. But they do seem to come as a package with like that. Not, I don't think you find those.
So you mentioned that there in the incipient speakership one and then the sequential boundary one. And I mean, we start new sequences with turns,
yeah.
So how do you tease those two apart?
I think in some cases you can't tease them apart, but on the other hand, I think that gives us quite an interesting handle on how it comes to be that some clicks get grammaticized. Because if the incipient ones come turn initially, it could be that, you know, some of them become done in a more conventionalized way, so they tend to be louder. Incipient speakership ones can often just be very quiet or even inaudible, whereas the ones that are doing stance type stuff are loud and never percussive.
Yeah.
So it seems to me there might be a sort of evolution here from opening up your mouth to speak and accidentally making a click to, "Oh, that was useful, let's do something with this and build a linguistic object from it." Does that answer what you asked?
Sure.
John?
Richard, that was fantastic. We were looking at the critical or dismissive clicks a while ago in our helpline material. And one of the things we were toying with, and we weren't really developed in the overall system of this, was that one of the things that it buys you by doing dismissive disapproval without lexicalizing it is, well, two things. One is your progressivity is not distracted by it. But in institutional environments where there are issues of neutrality, and you might well need to dig in later on to something, it can show a little bit of a disapproving stance on something being reported by the caller, without actually saying, oh, that's all for, and getting on the record in a sequence that you then want to unravel and say, but did that really happen? And, you know, so those kind of things. Actually, we had a data session the other day here where we were looking at some more institutional data where there were quite a lot of disapproving flicks or tuck particles. I think this might be quite an interesting thing for different institutional sites where issues of neutralism and quite kind of energetic business.
Are they treated as neutral by the recipient?
I don't think they are treated as neutral by the recipient, but they, because they aren't lexicalized, you can't, and you're not then accountable for having been on my side. I mean, it's a bit more long-winded than that, but
yeah, that's quite interesting.
Our hypothesis.
Yeah. And this material all comes from mundane stuff. I don't think I've got any institutional stuff here.
Well, we'll send you a couple of
them. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Thanks. Right on that point, I think we'll thank Richard again. Thank you very much.